Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Delta Flyers. We are a weekly podcast that discusses episodes of Star Trek Voyager in chronological order. Your two hosts along this podcast journey are myself, Garrick Wong, a.k.a. Ensign Harry Kim, and Robert Duncan McNeil, who portrayed Lieutenant Tom Paris. If you are interested in either an extended version of this podcast or the extended video version of this podcast, both of which include added bonus segments, please check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/thedeltaflyers and sign up to become a patron.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Robbie.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Man? I'm okay.
Yeah.
We just got done with our little interview with TrekMovie.com with Lori.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. That was a long, in-depth, emotionally draining interview.
Do you think I crossed some boundaries there? Did I go too far?
You know, here's always the funny thing. I think the fans of Star Trek and Voyager.
Yeah,
they want to know like the juicy stuff, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's natural for people to want to know. But it's always hard to tell these stories because sometimes when you tell part of the juicy story, it's not giving the whole picture and that's not fair.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not fair to like the people that are involved. So it's tricky. Like we want to give the everything we can remember, but we got to be careful that we're not just giving part of the story that's going to embarrass somebody. Or not really give their side of it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, because she had done an interview with Kate probably a couple of weeks ago, and people were quickly sending me messages like, "Oh my gosh, you know, I think Kate's really mad at you, or this and that." And, yeah. And again, anytime you do an interview, it's little snippets,
yeah,
and it's not the whole picture. And when you don't get the whole picture, you can then start to assume, and when you make assumptions, that's when everything hits the fan. So yeah. You got to be careful with that. So.
Yeah, it's funny sometimes that sort of thing is like gossip, right? Like in life, any kind of gossip is not really good. So it's tricky for us, like even on this podcast, to tell the story, to really give everybody a fuller picture of what was going on, but to be careful that we're not gossiping or embarrassing somebody, I guess.
Yeah.
It's tricky. It's definitely tricky, but sometimes we're going to go a little, dip our toes in those waters, and we're going to try to be careful. And most of all, I love and respect all of our cast and crew. Like I would never want to embarrass or disrespect any of them with any of the stories that we say, even if we may disagree about storylines or how people did things. Like I still respect their choices.
Yeah, and I think it's even trickier for me because I'm very blunt. I mean, I tell it like it is, and I say things that I don't really censor beforehand, and sometimes that gets me into trouble. So I need to be a little bit more cognizant of what comes out of my mouth. So,
all right. I'll have your back on this, Garrett. I'll keep you safe.
You gotta be my bodyguard on this one.
Audio bodyguard.
Will you be my Kevin Costner to my Whitney Houston?
Yes.
Is that what you're going to say?
Okay. Yeah, what's that song from that movie?
The bodyguard. I don't know.
Whitney Houston sang that song. And I will always love you. Something like that.
Is whenever that from you that start, movie?
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever you start getting into like territory where I'm like, oh God, Garrett, don't say that. I'm just going to start singing. And I will always love you. Okay. So that'll be our secret.
Thank you.
That'll be our really subtle secret sign of like, Garrett.
Yeah. I mean, other people do things like tug on the ear or like, I'm going to brush my nose or I'm going to say a code word like rutabaga. But then you.
I
whip out
a Whitney Houston song.
And I'll know exactly what you mean by that. Ease it back when I hear that. So this week's episode,
yes,
sir, Cathexis. And Cathexis. What a great name, Cathexis.
What does Cathexis mean?
I don't know, but who comes up with these names? Did you ever find out who?
I have a dictionary app on my phone. I'm gonna look up cathexis while you chat away for a minute.
Yeah, I've always wondered, was there someone in the office whose only job was to name episodes? Because if you think about the sheer number of episodes that we have through 7 seasons, that's a lot of names that you got to come up with, you know? And cathexis is something, did you find anything?
I did. Cathexis? Okay, cathexis is a noun. It is from psychoanalysis. And the first definition is the investment of emotional significance in an activity, object, or idea.
Wow.
And the second definition is the charge of psychic energy so invested.
Wow.
It's from the 20s. So it's from early psychology, I guess, kind of early-ish. Thesaurus says synonyms for cathexis are catharsis, narthexis, catharsis, calixis. Catharsis, though, I know I'm familiar with catharsis,
yes,
which is to have a breakthrough, right? Mm-hmm. Like an emotional sort of breakthrough. So a cathexis is probably kind of the opposite, like to be stuck or attached to emotionally something. Interesting.
Okay. So for our Patreon patrons, we're about to play a little game that we call What Do We Remember? For everybody else listening to our podcast, Robbie and I will be rewatching the episode. We'll be right back with our discussion of cathexis.
Yes, we will. It'll be a catharsis.
Wow, we are back. That was a very fast-paced episode. There's a lot of stuff going on in that episode in cathexis, right?
It wasn't my favorite episode. I'll just go on the record right away and say
for a number of reasons. That's fine. We're going to go ahead and do our quick synopsis. I'm going to let you do it, but I'm going to set you up with the very, very beginning part of it, and then you can just follow in after.
Okay,
go. Tuvok and Chakotay complete a trade mission in a shuttle, and they are on their way to the rendezvous point with Voyager when they encounter a dark matter nebula. Go.
Yes, they do. And some kind of energy force freaking blows through their shuttle. They get beamed back to the sick bay. But when they get beamed back, Janeway's playing around in some romance novel, Harlequin romance novel in the holodeck. She's playing around with all these British people in a fancy mansion. And they're like, hey, Captain, you got to come to sick bay because these guys are knocked out. Chakotay's brain dead. Nothing. Gone, brain dead. Tuvok, I can save, says the doc. So they bring them back. Anyway, long story short, it's very mysterious what happened to their brains. And all of a sudden, people start acting weird. Slowly, people start doing very suspicious things. And Janeway thinks, maybe there's like an invisible alien flying around taking over people's brains. She's right. There is. So as they start to figure this out, all of a sudden, Tuvok becomes suspicious, and then Janeway takes it even a step further. She's like, wait, there's 2 invisible aliens on this ship, good guy and bad guy, and they're kind of fighting each other, and they're confusing us. Tuvok ends up looking like a bad guy on the bridge, like he's going to win, and then we pull a little fast one, and we knock him out, and the bad alien runs away, and we realize that the good alien was Chakotay. In his spirit. Yeah. We thought he was brain dead, but no. He became an invisible alien and was floating around fighting off the bad invisible alien. And somehow the doctor puts his brain back together and we never go back to the holo novel in the Harlequin romance department. So that's my synopsis. I got a lot of questions, opinions,
definitely
confusion about this one.
But let us start with the very beginning. Teleplay by Brandon Braga, story by Brandon Braga and Joe Manosky. And I just want to make this point right now. At this point, Joe Manosky is not at the actual writer offices on Paramount Studios.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Not there. Guess where he's at? Spain. He is in Spain.
That's right. I thought it was Italy, but he was in Spain. He was far away.
It was amazing. Like, he was on the writing staff, but he was in Europe. He was living there. So he would type his revisions and whatever and just send them by email. And he pretty much just lived in Spain. I think Joe also had an issue with flying. Like literally he could not get on a plane. Yeah. So he took a boat to get to Europe, and then he lived there for a while. So I thought that was really interesting.
Wow.
That Mr. Banowski was in Spain this entire time. This episode is directed by Kim Friedman. This would be her second episode, season one, I'm guessing, that she did, right?
Yep.
We spoke a little bit on our what we remembered about her and how she and Kate were kind of bonded, female empowerment. They were like the original Thelma and Louise, I guess. So
they did. They drove a spaceship over a cliff.
Yes.
Instead of a car at the end, they drive a spaceship.
They drive a shuttle.
Yeah.
They drive a shuttle. Perfect. Now, yes. So we're in the Holland novel in the very beginning, and it was me that the Kim that notifies Janeway.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Can we talk about this Holland novel for a minute?
Let's talk about this Holland novel. I just want to, my only reaction about this Holland novel is that even though she's playing this is in her free time, she's still quintessential Janeway, how she tells off that other lady, you know, the governess.
Although she fell into this British accent, and I found that, for me, a bit of a problem, because I'm like, wait, is Catherine Janeway an aspiring classical actress? Like, it just, you know, it's like when I see movies or TV shows where someone who's supposed to be a civilian type person all of a sudden has the skills of a trained actor or a musician or something. Like, they should just be the character they are. And Janeway is a Starfleet captain.
Mm.
I found it confusing. Like, wait, am I watching Kate Mulgrew, the actress, doing this Holland novel story, or am I watching Janeway? Because I felt a little differently. I wasn't clear on, am I still watching Janeway? It felt confusing to me.
Well, I'm a little annoyed because when we did the Irish town episodes, that which are coming up later, Fairhaven and Spirit Folk, I asked to do an Irish accent. I said, I want to do, because, you know, I'm big into impersonations and accents. I said, this is my chance to do an Irish accent. I'm going to do a Northern Irish accent. And I remember I got vetoed on that. They were like, no, absolutely not.
I agree, by the way. I get why you want to do it, but I get why they would say no, because I agree. Harry Kim would not, like,
That's Garrett Wong and not Harry Kim.
Yeah, Garrett Wong wanting to do an Irish accent. That's not Harry Kim.
But if you're going to set those rules down for me, it should be the same for Kate Mulgrew as well. She shouldn't be allowed to do a somewhat, you know, serviceable British accent.
Yeah, it was a kind of hybrid British accent. Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing that bothers me, this is not Voyager, but just in general Hollywood, anytime we see a TV movie, feature film, television show set somewhere in Europe, everyone speaks with a freaking British accent. You never notice that? Like, you know, that movie, I'm just, for instance, Ever After with Drew Barrymore was set in France, but yet she was speaking with a British accent. And everyone, that's just the go-to accent that Hollywood has decided. We are going to, and I don't know if that's a result of the fact that we are in a colony, a former British colony, that we have this preoccupation with or obsession with the Brits and British accents. You know, what is that? Why does Hollywood do that? Have you noticed that as well? And does that bother you at all?
For this Hollow novel, I'm not sure what the Hollow novel was exactly. Michael Cumstey, who played the male, I don't recall the character, but
the man of the house.
Man of the house. Mm-hmm. Michael Cumstey is a brilliant classical theater actor. I've saw him on stage many times before Star Trek and since. He's very, very talented. And I remember talking with Michael about some mutual friends we knew from theater days and things. You know, Michael's talent is strong. Kate's talent is strong. The other female, the other lady in the house, was very good.
Yes.
My problem is with, why did they have this weird Harlequin romance novel opening that had nothing to do with the story or with character? Like, there was absolutely nothing that I could find where you would go, oh, that's why. And by the way, it went on a long time. Like, it was long.
It was very long. We could ask Brandon this, you know, when we get Brandon Braga in as a guest, or maybe Joe Manosky, we could say like, hey, what the heck? You know,
it was way too long. It was beautifully done. Like the set, by the way, I made a note, like the old school scenic work on that set, that was on built on stage. That was built by the Paramount construction department and the props department. It was a beautiful set. And the onset effects of rain and lightning and wind, the iron windows, every detail was beautiful. So I think the execution was great. I don't know why they did it. Like there was nothing about Voyager, even metaphor wise, I couldn't make sense of like, what is this supposed to be a metaphor for the ship or? Anyway, I'm baffled by the opening because it just seemed disconnected from anything else. And you could have had two lines and Harry calls, hey, Captain, you got to come out. Like that could have communicated almost as much important information as a 7-minute long scene that went on forever. And this is also the episode where my friend Brian Markinson gets introduced. Who's going to.
They introduced Durst now. It's just so that we start to sort of feel for him and root for him, or cheer for him.
So he doesn't just pop up in the next episode. I'm excited to have him join us for that. And
I got to be careful. We have to be careful about saying rooting for people, because as Americans, when we say rooting for people, that's cheering for somebody. But in England, Australia, that means a whole nother.
Oh, does it?
Ball of wax. Yeah. That's doing the nasty, basically. Oh. So,
Yeah. I don't want to root for Brian Markinson that way. I'm just going to cheer for him. Okay.
Did you notice in sick bay how on top of it Kes was? Like the doctor asks for a cardio stimulator. And Kes is already handing it to him. Like she already knew
she's good.
This is what's she's already, she's one step ahead of the doctor. And I'm just so impressed with Kes. I really am. And this is something that I did not notice while filming, right? Until I watched this. I'm like, hey, all right.
She's good.
But the doctor says that Chakotay's brain dead to Janeway. All I could think of was classic, Dr. McCoy from the original series when he says
dead, Jim.
He's dead, Jim. But in this case, he's brain dead, Jim, is what I was thinking of McCoy saying. So that, made me think of the original series.
Yeah. I was about to say that as they talk about this nebula that nearly killed both of her crew members and seems to have, killed Chakotay at this point, Janeway makes another questionable decision to go back to the nebula that almost killed the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because she says, oh, well, we can't, the doctor suggests maybe we need to analyze. If I could analyze the source,
the weapon,
weapon, then maybe I could figure out how to cure it. So without exploring any other options of how you might get that information for the doctor, she's like, let's go back to the scene of the crime. Let's go back and expose my entire crew to the jeopardy of this thing that killed already two of them.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm noticing a lot of questionable decisions by Janeway.
Does Janeway have a death wish? Does she have a death wish? Does she sit there and think, you know what? There's danger. Let's not go away from danger. Let's head towards danger every chance we get. You're right.
She puts everybody at risk. I mean, it does end up complicating things. And I've noticed this the last couple episodes, like early on, if she did not make the decision she made, we would not have been in the position for the jeopardy that we, the danger. Yeah. And this is one where I'm like, seriously? Like, can't we try to solve these guys without exposing the entire crew? So I don't know. It's funny because she's got this reputation for like, oh, yeah, Janeway, the way Kate played Janeway was so, she took care of her crew and loved them so much. I'm like, dude, she's just going to take the whole ship back to this danger place. Like,
she...
That's not smart. No. If she really loved this crew, she'd solve the problem another way.
While hightailing it away from the danger, we would solve the problem.
Yes, right?
At this point, I would like to bring up Tuvok, Tim Russ specifically, his pronunciation of the word S-E-N-S-O-R. He says sensor. Right, like a sore.
I noticed just got that injured. Too.
Yeah, and I said the entire 7 years, Harry Kim always says sensors, sensors. And even Janeway says sensors. I think Tom Paris says sensors. Only Tuvok is the one that says sensors. He says sensors. Maybe that's just the Vulcan way.
I think
maybe
it's
when
the
he
Vulcan
was learning.
Way.
Yeah, maybe. He was, yeah, that's just the way he learned sensors in the Vulcan Academy or whatever he went to. Vulcan prep school, you know, wherever he went.
Yeah.
And also, do you, on the show, did you say, I'm going to analyze the data, or did you say data? Because that's another word that sort of,
I don't know,
pronounced tomato, something data. Tomato.
Because I think say, I said data.
Yeah, I say data. I say I this I is the data. Too. And then I remember someone telling me on set, well, that's the character from TNG, so that's why it should be data. I'm like, no, I'm going to say data.
That's funny.
I don't, that that's the, we're not on TNG, you know, so I, and I'm just shocked that there's these two schools. It's really tomato, tomato, right?
Yeah, it's the same thing for data, data.
Sensor, sensor. I just find it interesting. The two sensor. Sensors. Sensors are, you know, mm-hmm. I'm gonna ask him that when we have him as a guest.
Okay.
I really want to know. In Kes's quarters, who decorated that place?
By the way, I made a note to myself, why is Kes's quarters twice as big as mine?
It's huge.
It's she has ginormous.
Like, she got the suite. And yeah. It's almost like Janeway was like, you know what? As an accompan, she suffered so much. We're going to go ahead and give her the suite. I mean, and it's massive.
It's massive.
It's the same bed. Do you notice that? It's that same bed that I have. I don't know if your bed is like that too, with that
exactly
neon
the same
tubes, yep, or whatever. But then she's got the foyer and the sitting area. She's got a dining table.
Twice as big.
Twice as big. She has that bronze, you know, bust of, I don't know if that's a Tibetan monk or Buddha or whoever.
Alien Buddha.
It's alien Buddha.
It's an Okampan Buddha.
But it didn't have Okampan ears. That's what was so weird. It was
It had Buddha ears and Okampan scale.
I love that you're the first person to get accused of like messing with the controls.
Yeah.
And you are so defensive. You're just like, I didn't do it. I mean, you were so angry. You wanted to, and then Janeway, she almost laughs at you in response. She's like, calm down. Now. It's not a mutiny.
I'm not implying a mutiny.
Come on, Tommy. Yeah, you know, I freed you from prison, remember? So, yeah.
Well, it's funny because I mean, on one hand, I get why they gave my character, gave Tom Paris that first suspicious beat, because he's the guy that was supposedly the bat, you know, had the bad past and things like that.
Yeah.
But as I saw it, I was like, God, again, they keep going to the same note. They keep playing the same song with him because ex post facto, he was the bat, you know, has the baggage of doing bad things. You know, oh, he's a womanizer. Oh, he does bad things. Oh, it's just the same thing over and over. And I found it like, why couldn't I be someone who was the hero accusing someone else of doing bad things?
You know?
And I know there were twists and turns, but it's just, I wish they could have protected that character a little better.
You know what? It's actually, that actually validates your reaction being as big as it was, because you have been dealing with the prior episodes of being the guy that's the bad guy. And I think in this episode,
it's like, come on, enough.
It's enough already. I'm not the bad egg. I'm the good guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I saved Mr. Kim from the freaking lobi crystals and quark in the bar. Yeah. Okay. I'm a good guy. I'm not a bad guy. So yeah. So that makes sense. I like that. Torres gets accused later of shutting down that warp core. Tuvok, did you notice how forcefully Tuvok grabbed Torres? I was expecting B'Elanna to just flail or knock him back and but Tuvok just manhandled her like she was, you know, like he was the kindergarten teacher and she was like a little child. It was like, grabbed her and pulled her away.
By the way, I think early on in the episode, Janeway says something to me and I say, "I, Captain." And then later on, Janeway says something and I say, "Yes, ma'am." And Rebecca turns to me. Rebecca goes, Rebecca said, "How do you know when to say what? Like, how do you choose a yes, ma'am, or I, Captain? Do you feel it somewhere in your, like, is it, oh, I get, my ears tingle and I know it's a yes, ma'am?" Or she's like,
you flip a coin. You're like,
flip a coin.
Heads. Yes,
I,
ma'am.
Captain. Yes, ma'am. I don't know. That was very funny.
True. It is very funny. That walk and talk scene that I have with Brian, I honestly do not recall that. at all.
Oh yeah.
I don't remember Brian on that set at all. I feel bad. I should have remembered that. But Durst and I, we just, this is one of the things that typically I have a very good memory, but that I have no recollection of shooting that scene whatsoever. That could have been.
I vaguely remember Brian being in this episode, to be honest. I know that they just did it to establish him. By the way, in the sick bay, when B'Elanna takes the stone and kind of puts it up like this and turns and puts it behind.
Yeah, the medicine wheel.
Mm-hmm. First of all, I was like, again, and maybe I'm just overly sensitive about this Native American stuff. I don't know why I'm overly sensitive about it, but I thought, God, not only have they minimized it with Chakotay's character, but now they've got B'Elanna doing a sacred Native ceremony that she is not a Native. And then she even says to the doctor later, like, yeah, well, he showed this to me once. So, like, how can you become, you know, it's like saying, oh, well, I saw a priest once perform a wedding, so now I'm going to marry people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how do you learn it? It's minimizing the sacred nature of whatever the thing is. And I also found, like, the whole prop, it looked like a bad souvenir from a theme park or something. Like it, the rocks are magnet and they're click. You can hear them clicking up on the wall. I'm like, that is not a Native authentic sacred thing. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It felt like a kid's toy from a theme park.
I'm going to agree with you on that. I also noticed, if you look at the detailing of not the rocks, but the actual pictographs on
The wheel
drawings. Yeah. They were like Mayan or Incan like designs. And I was like, wow, they're just going everywhere with this.
All over.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And just like, cause I don't recall medicine wheel being part of Mayan culture, but maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but it just, to me, it just, someone just said, okay, let's go with, you know, not Apache or Navajo. Let's go with Mayan symbolism now. You know, it was like, they remember when you were working at Chuck for lunch, you guys had a wheel and you would spin it and whatever restaurant it would land on, that's what you guys ordered for lunch.
Yes.
That's what they might have done in the Voyager office when it came to like, okay, for this episode with Chakotay.
Aztec.
Yeah, and it's not it's Aztec wins and this time.
Maori from New Zealand.
And yes.
Every Aboriginal, Indigenous people, cultural thing, they seem to just co-opt and mash it all up.
They just mashed it all up. They mashed the whole thing together. Did you notice I just made the sound of the Wheel of Fortune wheel?
Nice.
Yeah, that's what the doo-doo was.
So, oh, okay.
Right. I'm going to throw that in there. Okay. Janeway's hair.
Yes.
In the briefing room. From certain angles, what is going on in this episode? It looks like a mushroom. It's a mushroom. It looks like
very
a mushroom.
Weird.
It was so weird.
It was a weird,
it's so crazy how many times Janeway's hair changes throughout this season alone. I thought that it's uniformly, I seem to recall the entire first season was one way, but no, the first season alone, and we're only in, you know, we're not all even done with season one. It's changed four times or five.
Every week, almost every week, there's a new hair.
Every week.
Yeah.
New hair. It's crazy.
By the way, did you notice how triggered Neelix got in sickbay when, the doctor said something about a spirit, and he's like, who was in there? There was someone in there in Tess's room?
That was not in sigbay. That was while he was cooking in the mess hall, and Kes came up to tell him what she had heard.
Oh, that's what it was.
Another thing.
Oh, yeah. She said, and I had a spirit.
Yeah. He got all paranoid and jealous. He's like, who was in your room? Yeah. He was flipping out, right? And then later, Neelix is now talking to Chakotay. Neelix is now talking to the doctor.
The doctor.
And the line is, Neelix says, Ensign Parsons ordered his pajuta cold. And the doc goes, so? And then Neelix says, he always drinks it hot, with lemon, like that. The outburst made me think of, does Neelix have Tourette's? It's almost like he has these explosions of dialogue that just come out and it's like somebody's with Tourette's syndrome. And it's like really crazy. I mean, he's like, I don't know. I mean, it's to me.
Well, then the doctor says in that scene, like, calm down. He literally said, like, you got to calm down.
Yeah.
She's going to be fine. And then I loved at the end when Neelix hugged him, like Bob's face when it was like just such a
non-produced sort of like did he roll his eyes?
Maybe a little bit. It was funny. Whatever it was, it was so subtle. It made me laugh out loud when Neelix hugged him. And by the way, I noticed at this point a lot of scenes where there wasn't coverage. You know, often in a scene there'll be individual shots of all of each of the characters. There'll be singles. You know, a close up of Harry and a close up of the captain. In this episode, there's a lot of scenes where there's like two shots and there's people just, you know, facing each other and talking. And
yeah,
it's interesting this first season to see all the different directing styles. And
this is
definitely more kind of sit back and just look at the action play out.
Remember that four shot on the bridge? It was you, me, Durst, and Janeway. And
we were
all crammed into that one. Yeah, we're all like, hi.
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely not, you know, coronavirus approved.
No.
Pandemic, COVID-19 approved distancing. We were so close to each other. It was nuts.
Yeah.
And then also during that scene, like Janeway's whispering to us the entire time. And then all of a sudden she gets really loud. Computer, who authorized the ejection of the warp core? And then the computer's like, that would be Commander, what did she say?
Chakotay,
exactly. And so I just kept thinking, why are you now announcing that? Tuvok is now totally possessed by the alien. He doesn't hear any of the other dialogue. We're all whispering. Paris is whispering. Kim is whispering. Durst is whispering. Janeway is whispering. And then all of a sudden she goes, computer, and she's loud as hell. You know, it's like, okay, just telegraph everything to Tuvok, right? And did you find that Tuvok, his reaction time was horrible when Janeway goes underneath that railing to hit that button on her pop-up console? It's like Tuvok's already holding the phaser at us.
All he's got to do is hit a button.
Beep, just beep.
And he said it's on wide dispersal.
Yeah, like, wide dispersal. So he doesn't have to aim. All he has to do is hit the button. And Janeway takes forever to navigate awkwardly to get underneath that console. You know, I just thought, what the heck? And I know that he said he'd set it on kill, whatever, right?
Yeah.
But then if you think about it, those aliens, the Komar, I think was their name. Aliens, they needed us to live, to survive. They were going to suck our energy out. So he wasn't really going to kill us. Maybe, you know, if I was writing that episode, I wouldn't have said that these are set to kill.
Right.
Maybe I would have actually had one crew member rush him. Tuvok then stuns him with the phaser, that first crew member, which gives Janeway time to go underneath to undo the, you know, to push the button for the magneton scan that comes out. But so that was a little awkward how that worked. I just think it took way too long for her to get underneath there.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Do you remember when, so they thought I was a bad guy, so they took control of the con and they moved it to your station. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
They moved it to your station, so I couldn't control the ship. It turned around on its own or whatever. And then it goes to your place and you're like, and we turned around again. And she's like, Mr. Kim, what's going on? And you're like, I didn't do that. So obviously you can't control the ship any better than me.
No, I couldn't.
So I just want to make that point. Both of us lost control of the ship, even though we had all the power to do it.
You just had to bring that up, didn't you?
Yeah.
That was important.
Well, later on, by the way, once Tuvok's down and we're like, you know, working, everybody's back to work. Yeah. You and I are back at your station. Did you notice that?
You were never at my station.
Never.
That is did you notice I even looked at you? I'm like, there's Paris. Like, what are you doing here? And you got, you know, no social distancing once again. You were just
Up in your business, punching buttons.
You were up in my junk. And I was like, what is he doing? Why is he there? But that is probably one of the very few times in 7 years So Tom Paris stood at the operations station with Harry, right?
I totally noticed that. I was like, wow, that's...
I don't even remember that shooting that scene, but that was crazy. Yeah. Let's go back to the sick bay when we're there examining you, right? The first time, because you're the first one.
Is he like my look when he's
yeah,
like...
you're looking... Then you start reaching your hand back. Are you about to scratch yourself? What was going on there?
I realized that he's got a line where he's like, Mr. Paris, would you please hold still?
Stop
so
moving.
I had to be moving. So,
correct.
You know, I could have sat there and just been like boring, but I was adorable. Come on.
It was very cute. So I'm wondering, was that a Kim Friedman direction or was that you being just you?
I can't help it. Okay, Garrett, that's fine. It's adorable and I can't help it. I just, you know,
as a straight man, like, even I thought that was adorable. As a straight man, I was like, that's adorable. That is.
But I actually was looking at it kind of proud, like, oh, well, he's just scanning my head. Like, I could have just done nothing. But I was like, I turned it into just a light little, like, you know, light comedy sort of, what are you doing, Doc?
You were towing the comedy line.
I was kind of pulling one of those.
It was, and there was an innocence about it. Like you were a kid. You were like a little kid and you then reminisced about as a kid with your doctor, right? And then the doctor has that crazy line.
Dr. Brown.
Dr. Brown.
Well, that's a throwback
to the future.
Back to
Doc
the future.
Brown.
Yeah, Doc Brown. Because it literally, I thought, nice work, writers. I was like, Doc Brown.
Doc Brown. But when you started reaching back to scratch your head, that reminded me of the episode where we had the things stuck in the back of our, remember when we were on the alien prison ship, right?
Yeah.
And so we had those little things in the back of our head and we kept scratching them. Mm-hmm. It just reminded me of that scene.
Remember they had the analysis of Tom's brain?
Yes.
Of Balama's brain. And I just want to say that the analysis of my brain was really beautiful. Like...
What?
Like, there was so much amazing intelligence you could literally see on the brain analysis of my brain, which I thought was cool.
That would have been funny if the doctor said that. There is so much intelligence going on here, Mr. Paris. I can't even understand it. I mean, you could be the chess champion of the world.
Funny. The thing I always loved about Star Trek, though, when you look at those little cutaways to like the brain analysis or whatever, they always made them so clear, like what the story was, you know, the little graph where they said, well, here's a unusual pattern in Tom Paris's, and then here's an unusual pattern in Balana's.
Yeah.
And look, they look identical. Like it was easy to follow the story.
Yeah, they did a good job with
the graphics.
With the graphics really, department. Yeah. Is that Dan's department? Did Dan do that? Or was that...
Denise
and Mike Okuda. Sorry. They were doing that one. So they always do a good job, though. Those guys have been around forever. So
they're amazing.
They're really, really, really good at what they do.
Well, they did in that scene in the sick... I think it was in the sick bay. The doctor had a line that I have to say is very difficult to pull off with a straight face. His line was, well, one possible explanation, and the only one that I can think of at the moment, is that an alien entity momentarily took control of their minds.
Yes, I remember that line.
I just was like, wow, Bob. Like,
momentarily, an alien entity. Yes. Yeah, it's a tongue twister, for sure.
An alien entity momentarily took control
took
of their mind.
Their minds.
It's just a hard line to pull off with a straight face, and I thought he did a very good job. So
He did. He handled that well.
Yeah. And in that scene, by the way, the captain's talking to him and then she kind of walks around in front of Tom Paris. And did I look at her butt? I sort of like she walked in front of me and my eyes go like that, like, you know, the little elevator eyes, like down. And then I actually rewinded it. I was like, did I just check her out? And then I realized, you know how they put our marks on the floor, like tape? They put.
Oh, is that what it was?
I just looked down, glanced down to see, like, did she hit her mark?
Okay.
So when we're staging scenes and filming, they put little kind of tape, different colored tape on the floor.
Like an X, in an
like
exclamation.
An X or a T or something. So that as you walk around, you know where to stand so that the camera and all of the elements, the lighting, the camera, the lens.
That's right.
Gets the shot that they're planning to get. If you miss the mark, if you don't hit that mark, then the lighting won't be right, the framing won't be right, things like that. Yeah. So we can't, and you guys never see that because it's below the frame.
That's right.
And we can't look at it as an actor. You can't walk up to the mark and look down like this and then look up. It looks ridiculous.
It is. So sometimes when we were having problems with gauging where that mark was, they would put down like a little sandbag right there so that mm-hmm. our feet would hit up against it. So you would know it, that's where the mark is, right? Yeah. But I remember very early on when we were shooting the pilot, we got to choose what color mark that we had, I think. Did you recall doing that at all?
I can't remember.
Because
I feel like I had blue. Did I have blue?
I had a light blue. They originally gave like yellow, and I was like, and I said, don't give me yellow. You know, don't like being, you know, just yellow. No, I'm not going to go with yellow. I'm already wearing the yellow freaking costume. You know, I'm going to go with, you know, give me another color. So I asked for like powder blue because I went to UCLA, which is blue and gold. So mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I thought that would be good for me. But I thought you had a red mark.
Maybe. I don't remember. Yeah. I'm shocked I don't remember the color I had there, but I don't remember.
Mm. Okay.
So the characters, each of the characters usually have a different color, and the camera assistants usually carry a dozen different colors of tape, to lay down marks.
I'm glad to know you didn't check out Janeway's butt.
No, I think I was just checking the mark out. But when I first saw it happen, I was like, did I just look at her butt? I mean, I got to go back and look at that.
By the way, I think my butt also looked good in this episode too. When I walk out of sick bay, I was like, yeah, all right, I'm in shape. It's good. Yeah.
Nice. Good. Good. Yeah. I'm glad you're happy with that.
Thank you. Thank you.
The captain decides to give the doctor, because he's not a humanoid and the aliens can't go into his brain, she decides to give the doctor all of the ship's codes, command codes. Right. And I was like, boy, she was ready to kill him a few episodes ago. She was ready to like, well, let's just delete his program. And now she's given him command of the ship. I was like, wow, he really turned around fast.
And I just love the reaction of the doctor. Does that mean I'm captain? And she's like, no, you're not the captain. You're just, you get the codes in case I get debilitated. That's it. So that was true. He did make a huge turnaround.
He really did. Boy. Also, that Tuvok offers up another Vulcan mind meld with Kes. And I'm like, dude, that's two Vulcan mind melds already. And we're only like halfway through season one.
Neelix should have been jealous of that too. He should have been like, why are you getting mind melded with that head? That Vulcan guy?
Yeah.
And then he screams and has his Tourette's, you know, thing again. So,
why is the briefing room so dark in this episode? So we go in the briefing room because we're now all puzzled and we're trying to figure this out. And everybody's kind of,
weren't we losing power? Didn't we have some type of like power interruption? Like something happened that,
I don't think so. Not for this moment. I don't think so.
Yeah, that was a little, I didn't even think about. Yeah.
Was it just dramatic to make things feel dark and scary and paranoid?
Maybe. The music was definitely kind of like horror movie-ish kind of music. Yeah. I noticed
it just,
that.
It stuck out to me because the rest of the episode seemed like normal, relatively normal lighting. And then we go in the briefing room and everybody's in the dark. It was very, very dark.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't normally remember seeing that briefing room anywhere close to that.
After we disable Tuvok and he's on the ground and that alien energy presence leaves his body, mm-hmm. how the hell did it escape? Because our shields were already up at that point. You know what I'm saying? So because I make a comment, well, he just rejoined his friends and then they were trying to get back in at us. And I just don't.
How did he get out of the shield?
Out? Yeah, but yeah, exactly. Is it the shield only work one way? I mean,
I don't know.
To stop coming in, and then anybody who wants to go out can just go out easily. Maybe that's what it is. That's probably what the technology is. I'm guessing.
Sure.
It was just okay. A random question. The device on Chakotay's chest with the red and blue lights. Every time I saw that, I just kept thinking of Optimus Prime from Transformers. I just couldn't get away from that. I was waiting for that thing to transform into Optimus Prime when Chakotay was lying on that bio bed. By the way, Chakotay, my God, what a great episode for him to just
relax. No kidding. Yeah.
He just got to lie there
yeah.
and be catatonic for the entire episode except for the last scene. B'Elanna asks the doctor, how did you manage to reintegrate his consciousness? The doctor says, it involved 3 neurotransceivers, 2 cortical stimulators, and 50 gigaquads of computer memory. I would be happy to take you through the process, but it would take at least 10 hours to explain it all to you. Now, if you notice, I don't know if you caught this, but when he said gigaquads, he actually stumbled a little bit over that. Like he was a little unsure of that. Because if you think about what year this is, we don't even have a gigabyte of memory at this point. You know what I'm saying? Like so the word giga is new to anybody saying it.
That's 94 true.
Whenever we shot this.
Yeah.
And now if you talk about a gig of memory, it's just so commonplace, you know, like a gigabyte, terabyte.
It was a very exotic word back then.
It's an exotic word. So yeah. So even Bob Picardo, the king of technobabble and medical language, had a little bit of issue pronouncing something that was very unfamiliar. And all of us at that time.
You know, when B'Elanna says, how did you get his memory back?
Yeah.
I felt like that was a big cheat, honestly. Like, just because the doctor says, well, it was a lot of technology and a lot more technology, and it'll be really hard to explain. And we're supposed to just go, oh.
Okay.
But you said he was brain dead before. Like,
right.
It just felt like a cheat to me. Like,
It was a huge cheat. You're right.
The whole episode was built on... Chakotay is in a coma and there is no neural activity and he's dead. And I'm a doctor who can't do anything.
Right. So then how did he, and all of a sudden use, you know, three neurotransceivers and a cortical stimulator to boom, all of a sudden put his neural, you know, energy back in.
It just felt like a cheat to me. I wish if they had said something, if the doctor had said, well, I could only have done it if once we were back here in this nebula, and I was able to analyze things, I realized like there should have been a little more explanation, like just to go, oh, well, I did this and this. Well, why didn't you do that way back there? So we didn't have to come near this nebula. Like it was confusing.
I agree with you. It was just such a compact and quick answer.
It was an easy out. Yeah.
But it was an easy out because if you think about that, to actually reintegrate somebody's consciousness, good Lord, you'd have to have a shaman or, you know, you'd have to have all kinds of craziness thing going on to have this thing really work. And for the doctor to come up with that so quickly, it was just like, yep. I did like that. I'm amazing. Ta-da! So, that was a bit of a cheat. I agree with you on that.
And I kept waiting for the Hollow Novel to come back. Like I was thinking near the end, like, oh, well, they'll come back to the Hollow Novel. And that's why now we'll learn why that was there in the first place. Like And it didn't. And I was like, oh my God, that's the end.
Do you think they filmed something and that ended up on the cutting room floor that we never even saw?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think... If they had filmed something that really integrated that Hollow Novel story-wise into this story, then I think they would have kept it. They wouldn't have just thrown it out.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know why that Hollow Novel's there. I don't know. This was not my favorite episode. I found I found the whole zombie-like, like every time somebody got taken with a spirit, they'd pop up and turn like a zombie, and it was just weird. And
It was a really interesting choice, acting choice or blocking choice on the part of Kate at the very end when she puts both hands on Chakotay while he's on the bio bed. And I thought, wow, this is like sort of the beginnings of some type of Chakotay Janeway romance or something. Because right before she says, you know, Chakotay has come back to consciousness, and right before she says, good job, Commander. And welcome back is what she says. She leans in. And I honestly thought, is she about to kiss him? I mean, it looked like it was about to happen. It was about to go down right there in sickbay.
Wow.
I just thought it was a very interesting choice of her to have both hands touching his shirtless body, you know, while he's lying on the bio bed. That was a little odd to me.
Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to bring up was that, you know how with Star Trek, we have a full symphony orchestra that does our music, okay? And there have been so many times I've been in a convention and people will tell me, you know, Voyager has helped me with my insomnia. Like I will put on Voyager in the background to help me fall asleep. And You know, at first I was taking offense to that, thinking, wow, so are we that boring that we and dull that we actually put you to sleep?
Right.
But now it really makes sense, because I recall there was a 7-Eleven in Los Angeles that always played classical music on loudspeakers right in front. And I went in and I asked the guys, the clerk, I said, why do you guys, and the music's not even in the store, it's right in front at the door.
Right.
But right. Why is it there? He's like, well, we have a lot of vagrants here. We've had a lot of crime, a lot of violence. And the owner decided that in order to calm down the craziness is we put classical music on. And I thought,
wow,
oh my God, you know, classical music is used to sort of defuse mm-hmm. the violence or to relax people. And we have this full orchestra going on. And maybe this is also causing people that are having this in the background to relax and fall asleep. So that's something that I just
realized. Oh, interesting.
Watching this episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
Random.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else to say about a recap?
The underlying meaning, the message for humanity on this episode?
To kind of sum it all up,
yeah.
I guess for me, this was a hard one to find the theme or the meaning or the thing to relate to. But
yeah.
The closest I could come, because it's not my favorite episode, I got to be honest. This idea of paranoia.
Yeah.
And it comes from, you know, as soon as we start, it's like Janeway said in the briefing room at one point, like, you know, if we start pointing fingers, we're just going to go crazy. It's going to be chaos here.
Yes.
So for mm-hmm. me, I guess the theme is about that idea of fear, of paranoia. It breeds such a toxic mixture for people, you know, that you could see on our ship, people out of fear and the unknown and looking for answers. And so you just start blaming people or suspecting people. And it's very dangerous. I guess that's what I would say is I saw, you know, the behaviors in this episode, you saw people that you thought you knew acting very strange and all of a sudden not trusting each other. So to me, that would be the theme of like, stop pointing fingers for a minute. Just like step back and think about this a little clearer, because there might be a reasonable explanation. That would be my takeaway.
I had the same note. It was basically about the paranoia, you know, the caveat, mm-hmm. the beware of paranoia taking over, you know, your mm-hmm. rational mind, you know, because when you're not paranoid and you're just thinking logically and rationally, things don't get underneath your skin. You don't start freaking out. But the minute you allow that to really, and Neelix is a perfect example of that. You know, he let that, the fact that one crew member ordered his drink differently, hot instead of cold, made him flip out, because he thought, okay, this guy is being controlled by the alien entity, you know, and it's true. Paranoia and fear of the unknown is something that I think we all go through. And, mm-hmm. and really the lesson is to guard against that, or beware of that, be cognizant of that,
and keep your awareness.
Yeah, keep aware. Step outside of your body for a second, like Chakotay was, right? Step outside of your body and just observe yourself for a second.
Yeah.
Do I sound crazy? Yes or no? You know, yes, you can sometimes be objective about yourself if you take a second and don't, you know, react so quickly and stay on that treadmill of craziness, right? Just stop the treadmill. So I agree with you on that.
Okay, awesome.
All right, so that is our recap.
Yes, it is.
Yes. So thank you for everyone for listening into our podcast. Next week, we'll be reviewing Faces, and we will have a very special guest star who will be, or guest host that will be here with us. Shall we tell them? Should we just say who it is?
We could. Yes, we can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brian.
Brian Markinson, who played Durst, and the Vidian, I forget the name of the Vidian.
Yeah. He's going to recap with us, which is really is super cool. And I think we should make this a regular part of our podcast, and bringing somebody in for the entire, you know, podcast.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I one thing that I talked about in that interview that we did with Trek Movie before we did this recap was that listening to Office Ladies which is the, you know, the Office recap. They brought in Rainn Wilson and they called Rainn Wilson up at home and they talked to him for like 2 minutes max and it was done. Right. And it was like, yeah, you just teased me with that. And then you don't have him for the entire episode, you know,
right.
that bugged me. So I think that we are doing a bit of a disservice to the fans if we literally called Brian Markinson at home for a minute and a half and hung up on him and said, okay,
oh, no.
Thanks, bye.
Yeah. I think Brian will have some good things to say.
Yeah,
and
he will.
He's a friend of mine and he's we became good friends on a show many years after Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
When I did Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce, I produced and directed that show and Brian came on as a recurring character. And
oh, sweet. So he was on that show with you.
Yeah. Yeah. He did. I think he did all 5 seasons of that show.
Wow. But were you friends with him before he did Girlfriend's Guide to the Galaxy? Okay.
No.
Did he remind you that he was Durst? Is that how
he reminded me. He reminded me. I didn't even put it together. It's like, you know, we worked together. I was on Star Trek. And then he was like, I was like, which one? And he goes, Faces. I was the Vidian, and that was Durst at first. And I did 2 episodes.
He should have did charades with you where he grabbed it towards his face and, you know, ripped it off and then moved it to the side. He goes, does that remind you of anything? Maybe that would have been kind of funny.
Yeah.
But that's interesting that he worked with you so much later in life, not even, you know, you guys weren't friends during Voyager, obviously, but you became friends later.
Yeah, we became friends later. And we started working together on the other show. And I ride motorcycles for a hobby. I love riding bikes and going out for, you know, motorcycle days.
Yep.
And it turned out Brian also rides. And so we ended up riding together and taking some day trips. And
I love
it. In fact,
it.
I think Brian's off on a motorcycle trip this week. So
that's right.
So, a big trip to Montana or something like that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And when he gets back, we're going to be able to, he's going to join us when we review this. So this is going to be wonderful.
Yeah.
So thanks again for everybody for listening into this episode. And for those of you who are our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for our bonus content.
Yeah. See you next week, guys.